You're on the Plants Grow Here podcast. I'm Daniel Fuller. Come along with me as we enter a hidden world of deep horticultural, ecological, and landscape gardening knowledge with featured experts, industry professionals, and enthusiasts.
If you're a regular listener of this show, you'll remember my previous interviews with Irish landscape architect Peter Donegan. He's well known for his ambitious vision for each garden design that he undertakes, where nothing is ever quite what it seems on the surface. There's always plenty to unpack in terms of his inspiration and the methods that he and his team use to bring his vision to life. This year at the Melbourne International Flower and Garden Show, he told a story of an Australian fighter pilot who returned home from war a different man. While this is a fictional man, his story is not unique, and as you'll find out in this episode, a lot of people resonated with the picture that Peter and his team have painted. The show garden was titled A Moment in Time, and we were given an insight into this man's mental state, who couldn't quite bring himself to fix a leaking roof, mow a slightly overgrown lawn, or put his tools away so that they don't become rusted. In episode 181 of this podcast, A Daydream Supported by a Series of Equations, I spoke with Peter about this bold vision. But I wanted to follow up and interview him after the build and get his perspective on how the project turned out and how it was received by the public. If you're getting into garden design and would like to expand your thinking, or you'd just like to hear a master speaking about their work, this episode was created for you. Make sure to check the links in the show notes for a visual representation of each of the gardens we speak about in this chat. G'day Peter, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Daniel. Pleasure to hear your voice and see you again.
Yeah, I know. We didn't get to see too much of each other during MIFCUS. It was incredibly busy, and I can only imagine every single time I walked past you, you were there in your suit showing somebody else through the garden or having a chat with somebody. It must have been incredibly mental for you that 2 weeks.
That's an interesting point. I remember one of the guys from the NGIV, the Nursery and Garden Industry Victoria, and they came up and said, "We're sorry for stopping to talk with you again. I hope you don't mind regaling or retelling the story of the garden." And I think I sort of smiled back, if I remember the moment correctly, and said, "The day you don't want to come and talk to me is the day I'm sort of concerned." And The remit in our garden, which we'll get into in a little bit, was a little bit different, to say the least. But the beneficiaries, I think it's hoped, between myself and the Semkin family, certainly were not for our own gain. And so the amount of times you're humbled always to retell that or regale that, I think the better for who you made it for, if that makes sort of sense. And when you get it at the level that we've got it at, then that really is the humbling compliment, if I'm very honest with you, Daniel.
I can totally see where you're coming from. I think that there were a lot of gardens this year that were worth talking about, but certainly the subject matter of your garden really was a very touching subject matter. Can you please just remind the listeners, maybe somebody who hasn't heard of you before, maybe they haven't listened to the episodes where we've talked about this upcoming design or this design that's now finished, can you please tell people what the story is behind it?
The story is sort of harrowing, yes, but your listeners will just have to bear with me just for a second, because I'm only home about 5 days, so all of the bits are sort of still filled within my head, and they haven't sort of patterned down into something that makes perfect sense at this moment in time. My apologies for even how I word those sentences. But initially, the objective of the garden was to retell the story of a veteran Air Force pilot who returns to a place he hopes to be able to call it home. The garden set in 1984, so 40 years ago. We pit him at 40 years of age, and the garden ends up paired with daisies as a sponsor of a garden, but also, more to the point, with the Defence Force Welfare Association. And the numbers that they give us as some sort of official vilification is the wrong word, but some sort of backing to why I wanted this garden and why Semkin's tied in with me, I guess, as more than just contractor to their credit, is that the numbers on suicide rates in veterans, you're 107% more likely to commit suicide if you're a female veteran, 30% higher again if you're male, and the highest demographic of homeless in Australia are veterans. And I think that alone sort of makes people stop and take a stand back. Number one, but number two, I guess it's trying to retell a story of a guy whose mind can never really be the same as it was prior to being enlisted or to joining the armed forces. What's interesting is that in Australia, there's been a second Royal Commission and a third Royal Commission. So the third one has been pushed forward by 6 months, I'm told. I'm open to correction on this, but certainly on the second one, it appears that 0 points of recommendation were acted upon. In that, silly as this might sound, I certainly hope it doesn't sound silly, but in one conversation, and there are a lot of them that happened because of that garden, to my face as a guy who lives in Dublin, or maybe has a postal address here because I'm away so much. But to be humbled and privileged and to be allowed to design a garden that tells a story again, holding hands with so many others, is one part of it. That it tells the story of a mind that is not the same anymore, that one day rolls into the next. We had one guy come to me and said, 60 years ago, Dad left the forces. He was handed his pension and his medical card, and he was told, basically, you're on your own. You go forward to today, or you go back to 40 years ago, and not a whole lot has really changed, I guess, for veterans. I've no idea what it's like to be put into conflict and what comes with. I can tell you because of the work I have done in France in the designs of the garden to commemorate the centenary of the ending of the First World War, a garden of peace, not a war memorial garden, not an Irish peace garden, a garden of peace, which is you remember the past, but you look to the future. It's a little bit brighter for the children, I guess, of today who will grow to be older, that they have an understanding and a respect. But at the same token, there's a brighterness on the horizon, if that's even correct English. And I guess when you put that all together into a show garden that has an aircraft in it at 3.5 meters above head height, what happened is what I anticipated exactly would happen, which is that you hear people laughing logically, and we hope that they would, but then they gather what the story is about, and it brings you from the highest of highs to an absolute low. And that became, I say, the success of the garden, but it's a bittersweet success, and the success wasn't for me nor for the Semkin family. It was for who we intended it for, which is the veterans, and to shine some sort of a light upon what happens to them when they step away from services. Does that explain it well, Daniel?
I think that what we had was something that really resonated with a lot of people. And I think that that's evidenced by the fact that you won the People's Choice. And I think you're right. What happened is people saw the airplane and then they came in. It was like that Andy Kaufman thing where what they were seeing isn't necessarily what they were seeing.
Yeah, and the Andy Kaufman analogy is something that I would have spoke of hit or ditter, to be honest with you, Daniel. It very much is that. To explain that to your listeners, the Andy Kaufman reference, Andy once hired 40 actors to run through LA Zoo screaming, "There's a lion coming," but he never told anybody, and it was just him and his mates sat outside to see the expression on everybody else's faces. And I'm not trying to be jovial in that, but in this case, it's worth appreciating. There is no gain for a garden designer at a show as prominent and as dominant and as beautiful and as wonderful as MIFCUS or Melbourne International Flower and Garden Show is, one of the top three flower shows in the world, set in such a beautiful location of Carlton Gardens and the Royal Exhibition Buildings, a World Heritage UNESCO site. We're now the featured garden, and we decide ultimately you have two options. Let's be spade about it. In show gardening, which is you design something that Mary or Jimmy or you and I will walk past and say, wouldn't it be beautiful if we had one of these in our home? And you maybe sell it 10 times over. And the alternative is you turn around and do what we did, which is you design this garden and you ultimately give all of the gains and any of the successes away, because the successes of it, again, I'll say it, they don't benefit me, who wants a 1984 garden 40 years ago, and two, who wants an aircraft in a garden, ultimately. It may show that Peter Donegan can design a thing that is of a memorial, or it might show that I can design a thing that is emits emotion or gains that from a person or brings them from a high to a low. It certainly shows that Semkin Landscaping can build to the highest standards possible at one of the best flower and garden shows in the world, but all of the successes are gifted to a group that needs it. And in that context, the Andy Kaufman reference is, you know, our gains are personal, but they're certainly not of business or monetary. And in that maybe explanation, I think the reference of Andy Kaufman maybe makes some sort of sense.
I think it does make sense. So for me, Andy Kaufman wasn't someone who I got straight away. When I saw Andy Kaufman the first time, I thought it was supposed to be comedy, and I had a frame in my mind of what I thought that would be. And it looked like absolute chaos on the screen. I sort of at first was like, how can anybody enjoy this at all? And it was only after actually sort of watching it a few times and seeing, actually, there is a bit of method to his madness here. It's not by accident each of these emotions kind of runs through at this certain time. He really does take you on a journey. And maybe that's a little bit similar to what you're doing in terms of your garden designs as well.
Yeah, and look, I accept that, Daniel. But, you know, I'll reference it. There's a sort of a Cathy Heathcliff Wuthering Heights here. You marry the man who has all of the riches and wealth and money in the world, or you fall in love with the person who has the greatest heart but is ultimately broke. And the more you lean to one end of the scale, the more you step away from the other invariably, and vice versa. And in this case, I think if the motivation was money or metal colour, I think people would have picked up on that. And to put that in context, when we did the garden last year at Melbourne International Flower and Garden Show, and that garden won gold, one of the notes that was made to me with Martin Semkin was, if we'd have replaced the hedge going 20 metres up the left-hand side of the garden, for all any of your viewers, if you're on, listen to this in podcast format, press the middle button in your phone and go and search for the Bamstone Garden. But it tells it's a love story, and it tells the tale of a grown, in this case, Irishman who can't say the magic words, I love you, but yet he sits and waits for the woman of his dreams, the love of his life to arrive, but she won't come until he says the magic words. And it's a paradox of a garden again, he says, but in that hedge to fixate on that mildly, if we'd replaced that with a stone wall, we'd have gained 4 extra points in the judging, probably would have won best construction, and that would have led us into the running for best in show, but it would have killed the story. So in this case, the odd time when you set a garden in 1984 where the guy's mind is not correct. Let me hopefully word it politely and eloquently that way. Number one, but number two, one day sort of rolls into the next. The grass should have been cut. The plants should have been cut back last year. To put that in context of a design brief, drawings can show you so much. The explanation that I gave to Lilydale Lawn, what a wonderful business they are. And I say, you know, I genuinely, I hope they get something from this. But that grass that sat on the roof of the garden we call the Moment in Time, that grass was last cut in November. The grass on the ground was last cut 3.5 weeks before the show started, and the grass on the perimeter 3 days. And how we got it to become what it became was me holding Candice, and Gary put my arms around him with Martin Semkin, and I said, close your eyes. Let me explain to you the mind of a man who exists maybe in my head, maybe a culmination of stories that began in 2018 when I was doing the research on the first Jardin de la Paix, or Garden of Peace for France, a garden that was constructed in the dried up moat of a 13th century castle. But the castle had fallen in the Franco-Prussian War, the First World War and the Second World War. They know there are still bodies below the ground. They know they exist there. Only bad things ever happened in moats. And now you're asking a town to come into a space where they never wanted to go so that they might smile. And that's the most difficult of briefs, maybe in hindsight, he says, that I've ever been given. But equally now, if you transfer to this garden 6 years post the building or the realization of the first garden in France, you're now saying to people, well, we're going to bring you into this garden. You're going to smile. You'll probably laugh. And you'll go from that extreme right the way down to the other. And that's, that silly as it sounds, is the unwritten brief of this garden. With the caveat that because you've done this, you've now got a remembrance lodged firmly because of an emotion in your head and in your heart, and you start to feel what it's like to be part of this garden, or to see what this man in this case has gone through. It's an interesting one, because when we get into the detailing on this, Daniel, and huge credit must go to Nicole Semkin and Martin, and there's a really long team in here. But when we went into the cabin and closed the door, the one thing people used to say, and again, it's only 5 days ago, the one thing people said in a build that took 9 days that never existed before was, this smells like my grandfather's house. And that's the bit where you start to realize that when you open the jar, the biscuits were of an era, the sweets, the licorice, all sorts, the smell of the varnish, the smell of your grandfather's coat. I remember after my own grandfather passed, I remember mom picking up my granddad's coat and smelling it. And I remember my dad, after mom passed, and him saying to me, you know, the smell is starting to go from her pillow. And it's that makes you close your eyes and say, I've been transported to a space and a place. The opposite is probably not a consideration, but what's really interesting, I think there was a moment sitting outside where the old radio from the 1960s that the Semkin family had made work again, and it had that sort of old tune in the dial sort of a sound effect to it, and they were listening to a Carlton football game, and I asked what year the game was being played in, and they explained to me, no, it's today. That, join all those dots together, now bring it outside to the garden, now run one into the other and bring it back out again, and now you've got this place where we've actually transported you, not only from a high, an extreme high, to a low, but also from inside, that smell, that scent, that feeling, that this is my grandfather's tool shed, it's his television set, it's his radio, the calendar, down to the train timetable from 1979. The calendar on the back of the door was 1978 Royal Australian Air Force, but it hung on one nail intentionally rather than two. That minute detail and one little blip out of sync, and all of a sudden the dream is completely changed, and that's what this garden did. And people literally came up to the edge of the garden with sometimes an ire or an anger, but invariably there was tears and lots of tears. And the intention was never to make somebody sad, but at the same token, or maybe that sad, but the intention certainly was to, again, I'll say it, put those who need a brighter light shone upon them, put on a pedestal. And it's funny, I was listening back to a conversation recorded I had with somebody long before this conversation with you, and long before Build. And I think I was sort of saying, look, it's only when you get something like this wrong, when, again, that one minute detail is out of place, that you start to kind of turn around and go, okay, but you can't fool or bluff, to use the Irish word, you can't bluff 100,000 plus people and the media at Melbourne International Flower Show. You can't do that. You either do it right, and again, I'll go back and say it, you turn around and there's a couple of hundred people involved in this garden, in just piecing it together for 5 days only to highlight somebody or a group of people who need it. And I think in that context, maybe the People's Choice Award is some sort of nod to we got it right in the end. Yeah.
I think so. I think it was certainly the one that punched me in the gut. So I actually had a bit of a cheat on everybody else. I knew it was coming when I walked into the garden. But every time I came back, I would find something else. So, like, the first thing I noticed was obviously the plant choices, and the grass is a little bit longer. But as I look into that shack, the first thing I notice is the glass, and there's a bit of coke in the bottom. And I sort of think, like, oh, is it just coke in there? And then somebody else brought up that the couch is facing the television instead of facing out into the garden. And, you know, maybe if we could just make that switch, things might start to go a little bit better.
Yeah, and again, myself and Nicole, I listened to Nicole giving a talk on just piecing the inside of that building together. And we had spoke about, again, my dad post-mom. Obviously, I'll say it, I've got an Irish accent, Daniel, without stating the obvious, but you're trying to make the mindset of an individual who doesn't exist, so to speak, he or she, in this case a he, is a culmination of stories and 6 years of research. And one of the things we had said was that when Mom passed, Dad would have had the chair facing the television set in the kitchen. The big room where they used to sit together wasn't used as much. The old cup became just that. So the coffee stains on the table were intentional. The medals and the things that were organized were very much behind him. The train timetable, again, was 1979. And I sort of semi-queried that one in my head. And then one lady came up to me and she said to me, you know, my dad was a veteran Royal Australian Air Force. And she said when he came back, not only did he never speak about it, but we never traveled again. As a family, he never got into a plane again. And when she said that line to me, never traveled again, like 84 to 79, you've got a 5 year sort of difference in between. When you went outside and sat beside the radio, the scorecard for the AFL was 1984. And then you start to realize, okay, when you open the tobacco box, all of the cigarettes were regimented and how they were aligned and the size in which they were made. When you opened the jar with the licorice, all sorts, when you looked at his tools, they were, you could see that they were formally organized, but the things he was meant to repair, he just never got around to it. The drip off the roof, which was the smallest water feature, it dripped at one droplet per 1.5 seconds, to put that in context. And it was intended to be that way because it slowed you down and it made you stop and almost wait for the next droplet to come along. And I think one of my memories of that, just that little droplet, the smallest water feature in the world that took two people an entire day to piece together, was Ash Walker, who we would both know, trying to take a photograph of the droplet coming out. It's crazy.
I can just see that.
but it's what it's again, I'll say it, like we call it a moment in time. Some people sat in the rocking chair. Some people sat inside staring blank at a TV that wasn't even connected. And yet nobody turned around and said, and I'll nail this, even down to the light switch that sat outside and inside. I remember saying to Martin Semkin, I almost wanted to photograph it and send a picture of it to Dad so I could phone him and have a conversation with him about it. And that was just me on sort of day one of build. Mm-hmm. It was just ridiculous, but beautifully ridiculous what that garden did. And I can't emphasize it enough. Metal color. I'm not saying I'm silly when it comes to show gardens. Far from it. I'd understand judging rules, and I judged in the achievable garden categories this year. But this garden certainly was not about gaining medal. You have to sometimes give a little bit away, as previously explained with the Bamstone garden last year. You have to give a bit away in order to be able to do right by the people you're trying to retell the story on behalf of. And I think in that context, myself and Semkin Inc. and Ben French in Yards and Ash and Alyssa Astorino, who all worked on the garden, including we'd volunteers from Fernie Creek Horticultural Society who came down to help on the garden, and just to see the effect that it had on people who were a part of the build, and then to see the effect on the audience who were, I'm humbled to say, came in and the most, and for the greater part, thanked me with tears in their eyes. And that's tough for a guy who's not great at speaking about his emotions to deal with and to see. But it gave me a knowledge that I've got, I and a very large group of pretty amazing, wonderful people and contractors managed to piece together. And yeah, chapeau, well done all.
Absolutely. I think with a message like this, it's obviously very, a very meaningful message and something that's going to really resonate with people. But I think that if the horticulture wasn't there, it probably wouldn't have made such a splash. And I say that because it is the Melbourne International Flowering Garden Show. But the horticulture was there. Can we talk about the plant palette, please?
Yeah, well, how do I say this to you? 1984, let's be spade about it. Even if your listeners know nothing about horticulture, and I'm not going to assume that everybody listening to this is a sort of a Dr. Ian Smith. Hello, Ian. thanks for not interviewing me the last day, he says with a wink emoticon. But what a talented gentleman is, by the way. But when you go to 1984 and you look at photographs of your dad or your granddad, the cars they drove, the music they listened to, you know, anybody out there with an iPhone, press the middle button and just Google best songs of 1984. I mean, there's not a fat lot in there that would make you turn around and go, I need to relive this. If it was of sort of Woodstock, with Hendrix and Joplin and et al., the Stones, and you'd kind of go, yeah, that's a beautiful era. But as it stands, 84, not really. So genuine honesty and hand on heart, you take it that you put that in the top left corner of the garden. That's one. The second part is when you've got an elephant in the room, which is an aircraft, that's 3.5 meters above head height. Bearing in mind the tipping point or the balance between getting this right for the veterans at all times is the only objective. getting that wrong or highlighting the fact that you've got an aircraft that is unmissable, it requires a dumbing down or a very complex imbalance of the garden without sounding in any way overly artistic, but you don't need to highlight the thing in the thing that everybody can see anyway. So the planting palette was designed or put together with huge help from Kim Moon, who works with Martin. But its sole objective on the right-hand side, as people look at the photograph, was to go completely dumb. 1984 wasn't exciting in a nutshell. The plane doesn't need, or the aircraft doesn't need, to be highlighted anyway, but the planting palette at the time, certainly in what leads up directly outside the cabin, all of the achilleas are sort of an off orange, off yellow. All of the plants are sort of an off pink. The brightest one in there is geranium, which is a dark purple. And if you look at a color wheel or you know anything about basic design principles, you know, yellow off a black bounces. It's what we used last year, a strong dark purple with a yellow in front of it to make it pop in certain points of the planting. In this case, we go complete opposite. And so the closer we go on the color wheel to each other, from a yellow beige or an off yellow to a beige to a brown to a green to a dark brown, the more sort of not noticeable it can become. To put that in context, when we're doing work with public spaces, if we want you to have a very high hustle and bustle, busy shopping street, let's say, we make it like pop and candy, blues and purples and yellows and reds, and every color bounces off one of the other. It makes you walk faster. It makes you stroll faster. It makes the sensation of the noise, everything in it starts to go up a notch. And when we take street planting or planted areas of residential or business in places where, let's say, crime is slightly higher, we would tone that down sort of similar or more similar to what we have done in this garden here, which is they're sort of soft blues and soft greens and soft yellows, and nothing bounces and nothing pops, and it calms you and it slows you down and makes you walk slower and makes you take your time, and people don't realize what you're doing, but you've done it intentionally, and you're deciding how you want people to feel or act before you actually go and put it into a horticultural practice. It's not just a list of plants thrown in. To go to here, all of those off, soft, very close in the color wheels were one. And the only bit of planting that would pop is in the bottom right hand corner, the hydrangea paniculatas were bright and blooming in their white flower. But again, white to lime green is the complete opposite of how you make pop and candy style planting. And if you look to the top left, which was nearest the cabin, the hydrangea paniculatas were perfectly chosen because of how off they were, or how they were going out of flower, or how they were not perfect. And so it sort of signified when you get closer to the home, the less of a the less the veteran cared about them, really. And the difference between the two, the ones closest to were the brightest, and the ones nearest his home or his house or his place of respite is the wrong word, but calm, that's where they were actually sort of, they were becoming almost necrotic.
Wow.
And that's ultimately what we are playing at. But you can't highlight those two extremes of hydrangeas when everything around it is a riot of color. Mm. You have to dumb it all completely down, and that's exactly what it became.
Yeah, they really stand out, and it's sort of like you can almost, now that you bring that up, it's almost like you can kind of like see that the shack itself sort of helps to balance that color, and the so I can see that those four points are really standing out. It's the white hydrangeas on either side, the plane, and the shack.
Yeah, and I think, look, once again I'll say it, look, you know, like, could we have, inverted commas, done the planting better? I'm sure one could have done it better, but who would have gained in the regaling or the reflection back upon that show garden? Then probably me or Kim or the Semkin family. But again, I'll say it, that's not the case. You know, elevator music is designed to be elevator music. It's not meant to make you dance in the elevator. And bridesmaids are wear dark purple, so one color, which is white, can pop. And in this case, the highlight of this garden wasn't the aircraft. It was when you looked at the entire thing as a whole. Again, when I say it, when you walk into the cabin, when you walk out of the cabin, when you look out the cabin window, the garden as an entire complete entity has to reflect inside to out. And in 1984, inside that cabin, outside the cabin, you know, nothing really is meant to be extraordinary. Or again, if you look at, and I'll say it, compare, or your listeners who are there, go and search for the Bamstone Garden or Peter Donegan Australia or something like that, Melbourne. It'll come up for you and you'll see the two, and the planting in last year's garden pops, but it pops across a 14 meter distance of a reflection of Illyriodendron tulipifera in a mirror of black water. And therefore the yellows bounce off of that reflection as well. But the bit that's the highlight in last year's garden is a reflection. It's not the actual planting, if that makes sense. And in this one, you want people to be solemn and you want people to become mildly subdued, and it needs to emit a ultimately a sadness or an emotion, which is from the highest to the low. Was it a beautiful, complete wraparound family hug of a build and design? Absolutely, hand and heart. Again, I'll say it, did I do myself any favors? Business-wise, probably not. Medal-wise, never an objective. I think we were always going to get medal, but the color wasn't really up for question. Did the people? I think this is probably the one that will sit with us all the most, including the Defence Force Welfare Association, Daniel. But the people ultimately, and again, I'll say it, you can't bluff 100,000 plus Aussies or Irish. We don't put up with that. And we're very well aligned in our sense of humour, he says jestfully, but also our ability to insult each other and both of us laugh. And in this case, I think when the people turn around and say, "It, we get it," then I think myself and Semkin, the Semkin family, turn around, take a stand back and say, well, okay, we've got what we deserved. We got what we wanted. And what we wanted ultimately was that the veteran, in this case, the veteran singular, but on behalf of all of the veterans, that people take a stand back and say, well, this isn't as pretty maybe as it seems, and maybe something, he says, hopefully will change for the better and for the better of others. And it's a complete giveaway. I gain nothing by doing what we did. And I wouldn't swap it for the world.
No, I think that's beautiful. I did want to ask you a couple more questions about horticulture before we get to some of the Veterans Affairs stuff. Because I know that you were involved with the Defence Force Welfare Association, but I just wanted to just talk about that plant palette. I really do think that you played it down. It's a beautiful palette. And I think it's a beautiful layout that you have. There's something modern about it and something old-fashioned about it as well. I can just imagine him whacking the brush cutter against all of the stems.
I'll give you one of the funniest things in this garden. The edging of just the right-hand side of that garden would have taken Dale from Yards and our very own Ash Walker about 2.5 man days to complete. And the reason being is that the grass obviously hadn't been cut, or sorry, was last cut 3.5 weeks beforehand. But if we'd have done this as a normal show garden, we would have gone along the edges of it with an edging shears and it would have been pristine. In this case, how it was done was they used the secateurs, but they cut it from the underside, the root zones end of it, and then pull it outward so that the frailed edges remained as if they should have been also cut back again. That was one of them. I think there were plants in there that, again, I'll reference to hydrangeas, where you're going and saying to somebody like Warner's, what a beautiful, again, family to hold her hands on this one. And you're saying to them, no, we don't want the perfect ones, Andrew. We want some that you've thrown, and they're telling us we don't have any that look terrible, understandably, but we need... they're maestros at what they do, but you need, again, the same way we spoke with Lilydale, why would they have grass that they haven't cut since last November? The same thing with mat and established trees. It's a ridiculous remit where there's a million group puddles in there, from the inside of the cabin to outside, to the grass, to the edging. Even the sleepers were old school. The wood of the cabin itself, when you look at that, getting wood that was 40 years old but also structurally sound. If you look at the post box that we had on the outside, that was 1/13 to scale of the actual building with the piece of grass sitting on top of it. And when you look at the fencing at the back of the garden, silly as that sounds as well, we had gaps in it where a normal show garden fence wouldn't have. Your objective of that would have been to block out what's sort of behind you, so your photographs aren't interfered with. There's points in there where we had to concede, but again, I'll say that it's the right thing to do. So when you walk 360 around the garden, you start to realize there's not a hair out of place, he says, but it's not a hair out of place set in 1984 for a guy whose mind is sort of never the same. So the planting cumulative became sort of semi incorrect, which is where it sort of does me no favors. At the same token, and in a funny twist maybe, I had a conversation with Charlie Albone on the garden, and we were chatting about photographs of show gardens from 1980 to 1985, and how if you looked at those photographs now and you compared to what was, inverted commas, en vogue in Instagram, how not a whole lot really has changed. And trends come and go, and achilleas and perennials are back in fashion. Hydrangeas, arborescents, the Annabelle ranges, they're all back in vogue. Mm. They're every Instagram photograph with a swimming pool and a line of bleached trees in them. So there's a lot of stuff in there that is 40 years ago. The arrangement of it makes it feel aged or old or like your granddad's, depending on your age at this moment in time. But at the same token, there's a lot of it where people turned around and went, that's really clever how you did that. And I'm scratching my head saying, what? It's 40 years. It's 40 years ago. And they're saying, yeah, but this would look beautiful in our garden. The amount of people who we saw reading the plant list repeatedly or going through the plants and the trees that were in there was something that surprised me, when the intention maybe was that you would, I'm not saying you browse past it or you don't notice it. Again, if you close your eyes and pretend for a moment, if you will, that you're the veteran, my note at all times was, this is a man with respect for himself. He dresses well, he looks after himself well, but just the grass should have been cut about 2-3 times ago, and the planting maybe should have been cut back a season or two ago. And what's on the roof you can't get to, and the ladder is stuffed in behind the hedge or in between the hedge, and the hedge is grown through it. The things that you're meant to get to don't, but he has a respect for himself, and he's regimented, if I might use that word, in how he conducts himself. His mannerisms are there. He's not a completely gone person, and we wanted bits that people would identify with. We knew that they would, I think, en masse when we put it all together as one show garden. I think the surprise was the unknown, and the unknown ultimately is not the construction of the garden. It's not the design of the garden. I can design, I say that's easy done, but that's not for question. The construction was not for question. The bit unknown was the people who came to the edge of the garden and showed emotion. And in that context, I think it surprised me a lot of how far emotions rose and how much people identified with a smell or a scent or a feel or a look. And ultimately, for those of your listeners that, you know, who are members of student organizations, be it with the AIH or the LDI or the Society of Garden Designers or whatever it might be, I'll put garden design very simply in a couple of sentences. And this is exactly what I said when I spoke to the recipients of awards or not at the Achievable Gardens on the Tuesday last week. And I said, look, when you're 19 years of age and you're broke and it's Valentine's Day, you pull down the blinds ever so slightly and close your eyes if you're listening to this, and I promise you, you'll get it or you won't. But you're 19 years of age, you pull down the blinds a slight bit, you have a glass of red wine poured each, the candle is lighting on the table and Solomon Burke is playing in the background, or Otis Redding. That there is garden design in a nutshell. That's somebody identifying with a place and a space that has existed in just a couple of sentences. The bit where garden design becomes something else is where I change Otis Redding to, say, AC/DC, and I change the glass of wine to a can of beer, and I blow out the candle and let the blind up. The blind and the candle still exist. The drink in liquid format still exists. But the entire thing is out of sync. And if we bring this into where we are now, we can better the planting and change the complete feeling and sensation of the garden. The cabin now looks out of sync and nothing gels or ties together, and people are saying, why have you got a rocking chair there? That is ultimately where you can draw all of the things you want. And as Martin Semkin would rightly say to me, and understandably so, the issue we have at times is the bits that are in Peter's head.
I hear what you're saying about that the planting palette is old, and I can hear that, and intellectually I understand that, and also I can explain away the green roof as being old fashioned because you can't get to it. But the green, it's exquisite, Peter. It is a beautiful piece of green infrastructure. I mean, a green roof like that doesn't just happen.
Yeah, and look, they're coming into vogue. As sure as plants growing in pockets on walls were used in Charlie Albone's garden last year, green roofs are coming into popularity. And again, I'll say it, you know, crazy paving was a big thing in 1980. 40 years later, it's back in vogue again. I never understood it back then. I don't appreciate it too well now, but that's just on a paving side of things. If you take the green roof, it is coming back into vogue. What's interesting is how we had it overshadowed with an 11 to 13 meter tall tree. If you take the planting individually, yes, but the arrangement of the planting is what changes or makes a feeling. So I don't mean to suggest that it's not an integral part of the garden in any way, Daniel, but I think what I would say is the whole thing must feel like it's not an individual collection of pieces at an exhibition. It has to feel like you walked into up to your grandfather or your father's front door. His post box is there. If you look at the newspapers in there, they're 1984. They're original 1984. They're stained and they're old, and they've been left there for a while intentionally. They've been left in the sun and parts for too long. That's intentional. We made that happen. If you look at the chain where the water drips, it's one droplet per 1.5 to 2 seconds. That was treated in hydrochloric acid a couple of days previous to speed up the rusting. And when you get inside the building and when you look out the window, you start to kind of go, woof, wow, I've been transported. And it's not, I'll go back and I'll say what I said before, when you look at the garden we did in France in 2018 and inaugurated in 2019, people walked into that garden with tears in their eyes because of the history to the castle and the history of their town, the emblem of their town. As one guy said to me, the head of PR, funnily enough, pulled me to one side just before I was about to give an interview to France 3 TV3 News. And he said his father was born before the First World War, left the town, came back, the town was flattened, became enlisted, became a prisoner of war, returned, and the town was flattened. And he grabbed me by the two collars in a very, you know, divine sort of a non-threatening way, I should add in brackets, and just said to me, do you understand what you're responsible for? Mm. And you get that now why people had tears in their eyes. In this case here, I'll go back and I'll say it, when you design a space that makes people laugh or not laugh at first sight, but ultimately transports them to a place that is 40 years ago that allows them to scent or smell, to identify with a place or location. When you take it that it's 100,000 plus people passing through the gates, when you take it that it's stalwarts like Charlie Albone, like A.B. Bishop, Trevor Cochrane, whoever it might be who's reporting on the media, you can't bluff that amount of people. You have to get it right. And bringing somebody 40 years backwards to an emotional place, not just 40 years back, here's a photograph of something that granddad used to drive, bringing them back where they close their eyes and they start to well up.
Mm.
That's something that, you know, we had it on last year's garden where they came with a smile and they walked off with tears. In this one, most people for the greater came with tears in their eyes as they approached the garden because it immediately brought them all the way back as they walked through the garden and were maybe fortunate enough to get a look inside, even from the side window. That didn't help matters in that case. But the reason for realizing a garden that would emit that emotion or make somebody feel that way was for another's gain. And certainly wasn't for personal. And so, you know, it has to be a cumulative thing, Daniel. It really has to be. And look, I'll say what I said again to the design students when I'm speaking to them. If I walk into your house and say, I love your skirting boards, something is wrong. It's not meant to be that way. Backdrop is meant to be backdrop. The lampshade is never meant to be the most beautiful thing in your home. It's meant to feel like home, and it only feels like home when all of the elements feel like a group hug. And that's exactly what we managed to nail between us.
I absolutely agree. The only reason why I pick on the green wall itself is not because it stands out like a sore thumb or anything, but because we had a similar green roof, a fair bit smaller at the R8 stand, and I know that green roofs don't just happen.
Mm. There's two reasons to it. They are coming back into vogue, but two reasons to it. If you take in Ireland where you would have had thatch roofs that were let go, ultimately some sort of a landscape would have taken over. I was sent a photograph about 2 weeks ago of a guy with fake grass. Sorry for the record scratch sound effect in a lot of people's heads when I say that out loud. But the point of the photograph was that the weeds had started to germinate into it. The same thing will happen with asphalt.
Mm.
We call it tarmac adam here, but same thing will happen with asphalt. Eventually, nature will take over. And I think initially there was a sort of a consideration of it being a corrugated iron roof. But it's only when you see the overview photograph of the garden that you realize, to the face of it, yes, it's a place for a guy whose mind is not the same anymore, and how he can sort of reseed backwards or hide maybe into this building and sit underneath. And you'll notice the roof tilts forward, you'll notice the overhang, but it's only when you sit on that rocking chair, that's the view that the public should have had. Because when you sit in that rocking chair by the radio, by the wireless, if I may, you actually don't see the aircraft, and that is intentional. And the grass roof really does join from the overview photograph. It really does join, how do I say this, the disjointedness of the whole ideology of the garden. It really does make it sort of assimilate together in some sort of a way. But then if you go all the way back into what we had originally started talking about, this is a guy who things were together for him. Life made sense at one point in time. I'll quote Dad again, who was maybe a bit of a reference point for me. And I remember him and Mom had a wee little chockeen, is the Irish word, or a small sort of a house that they'd get away to in a beautiful part of Wexford. I remember Dad saying to me he was going to sell the house. I said, you know, you can't, Dad, like my sister, so they might, you know, be irate or upset or something. And he just said to me, look, Peter, you know, myself and your mom had our dreams together, but they just don't make sense without her anymore. And that's the bit where now I transport you back to this garden about this man whose mind meanders one day to the next, to the next, to the next. And you kind of say to yourself, well, you know, it should have made sense at the start in its initial design. It doesn't make as much anymore. The grass that hasn't been cut in 5-6 months, that's exactly what it should be. And I think one of the favorite reels that I have, I don't have too many of them, is Brian and Amanda. Brian from Semkin and Amanda from Yards, and they're on the roof of the building cabin. But it's Brian is stuffing the grass into a small void where a knot of wood had fallen out. And he's just ramming it into the side. And one of the guys involved in Better Homes and Gardens came up and said, that is genius. And I didn't know what bit he was talking about. And he said, we have Sir Grange at home in our garden, and it's made it into some sort of a void in the back of the drain pipe or something along the lines of. And I kind of went, whoop. Well, I'd say that's how it should be. The detail in that is just extraordinary. And again, I'll say it, look, when you have the best by your side, which is the Semkin Yards, Ashwalker, Alyssa, the list is endless. The volunteers, the amount of people involved in that garden was ridiculous. Andrew, or Drewy as he's best known, this will give you one bit of context. On the Saturday, the first Saturday of the show, he was doing a barbecue for over 85 people.
Right.
All volunteers at some point in time in that garden. That's one. I would have lived in Andrew's house with his wife, Jeanette, and his daughter, Chloe. I don't mean to be clever in saying this, but I would wake up the next day. I'm not a two-year-old child, but at the same token, my lunch was made. the army, wrong word, apologies, but the amount of people involved in making all of this work for 5 days is an absolute colossus. And again, I'll narrow it down. One person working for 6 months, which is Nicole Semkin, just on the interior of that building is most show gardens full stop.
It showed. It was an incredible piece of artwork, not just a garden. It was a beautiful garden. So, but Peter, I know you, and I know that, you know, you did this garden for you, and, you know, you obviously have a very personal connection, and so do many people within your team. But I also know that you made this garden for the wider community. And I also know that you had a lot of pressure on your shoulders. You took it upon yourself to feel that pressure and make sure that you didn't get the message wrong. So how did you, who did you reach out to, and how did you make sure that there was another pair of eyes checking over it, somebody who really knew what they were looking at, to make sure that you sent the right message?
That's a difficult question, Daniel. So I'll put it in context, and I'll say what I've said before. The job or the role, as I would see it, of a good garden designer is when it goes wrong. You're like the football manager who loses 5 or 6-0, and you stand in front of the camera, you take the heat, you don't blame it on your own players. The odd time they do. And the opposite is when you score five goals in one game and they say, how'd you get on? And the footballer says, I just want to thank my teammates. Without them, this wouldn't have happened. And I'd like to thank the fans. And you sort of palm it all off. When you consider how the end result, which is an emotion of a garden, can go wrong, that's when it becomes a laughing matter, a grave insult, a complete and utter juxtaposition of there is no hiding place and there's no getting away from this at all. And you do look, he says, somewhat the fool, and it probably doesn't help, let's be honest about it, if you have not a residence in Australia or your grandfather was never a veteran. So I think the Defence Force Welfare Association coming in with their stats as versus my opinion, if I may, even with 6 years of research from the work I've done in France behind me, I think having those on their numbers on board or that vilification or just their stamp of approval. And Mike from the Defence Force Welfare Association stood with us every single day in that garden from morning to close of business. And when I spoke with therapeutic horticulture, just to give you one of the examples, Mike would have done the second part of the talk where I would have done the first part. And it was the right way to do that. That's one part of it. The second part then probably is that you can have a brain like Martin Semkin, whose father was involved with the Royal Australian Air Force, would have built the F-111s. You start to realize when the initial words are written down, which were, if you have fallen, your name goes into a piece of stone. If you've fallen and your body is amiss, your name goes into a piece of stone. And if you return and your mind is not the same, then what happens next ultimately? That was the text before any drawings were ever done. That's what people were read when Martin went looking for the wood, when he went to look for the plants, the plane, the grass, the whatever the case may be. And I think the what we've already discussed, to be fair, Daniel, is you can't, I can't query Semkin's ability to build a garden 40 years ago. We've already done the bit where it's seen inside the mind of an Irish guy. So that's not up for question anyway. They know who I am. They know what I can do and vice versa. They know the work I've done in France or for television. And I know what they're able to do as well. And there are maestros at it. So none of that's up for question. The only bit nobody can prepare for, and the nervousness, if I might isolate just that word, the nervousness becomes that, say, your father, Daniel, or your partner's father comes to the edge of the garden and says, you know, you've got this wrong.
Yeah.
Or the media decides to report it as, who does this guy sort of think he is coming in here and doing that? But that's not the case, and that's not how it happened. And again, I'll say, when you're down to the light switch, that's when you start to realize this will be nailed. Pedantic, finicky, all of those, again, two and a half man days to edge, what, 15 linear meters of grass is ridiculous in any calculation of man hour units. But the truth of it is when you take a stand back, and you know you've put that level of detail into a construction and a build and a research of one show garden for both 5 days only, nobody can prepare you for a mom coming to a garden and having tears in her eyes whilst being so upset, whilst being so angry, and she's talking to you about her son. And that's the bit where I don't care what designer you are or who you think you are. That is a humbling, privileged, emotional thing that will probably never leave me for the rest of my life. It was that last conversation at that garden on the Sunday whilst there was a young girl, and again, if you go to my Instagram page, I don't mean to direct people there, but if you go there, there's a photograph of a girl in a white dress standing on the garden. And anyway, when you scroll to the second part, the first one's a photograph, the second one's a video, and you listen to that song, that's the song that was playing whilst one of the last conversations was being had with me, with a mom speaking about her son, who was a veteran. And I can only say very politely that things weren't maybe as bright as she hoped. I hope that puts it in context. That's the bit nobody can prepare. No college, no Institute of Horticulture, no nothing prepares you for that as a reaction. And again, I'll say it's a humbling, beautiful privilege to be allowed to go back to Melbourne Flower Show, to be allowed to stay in Andrew and Jeanette and Chloe's home, to wake up the next morning and to be welcomed with a smile, to go to Melbourne Flower Show, one of the most beautiful places in the world and one of the most beautiful flower shows in the world. I can't emphasize that enough. To work with a team like IMG, to work with the amount of suppliers that we had involved in this garden, which is a ridiculous amount, where nobody said no, to retell a story where ultimately myself and Martin Semkin and an entire family by our sides, etc., too many to mention, my apologies, sit back when it's all done and go, we did okay. And that probably is where my head says, we did right.
I think you did absolutely right. And I think people's choice just tells you that, is that the people not only accepted what you gave us, but we loved it. We absolutely loved it, and it resonated with us.
And your words, Daniel, I know this is an interview, and your questions, believe me, you know, your questions are difficult, and I'm not knocking you for that. They're just difficult at the moment, this moment in time, because maybe I haven't had time to just take in all of those stories that I heard at the edge of the garden from invariably people who are very hard affected by what a family member or a husband or a dad or a grandfather they saw through him. And I maybe just need the dust to settle there. You've maybe caught me a little bit off guard, but at the same token, your words there that it meant a lot to you and a lot of other people coming from a man who I would rate highly. I know you know that, but it means a lot to hear you say that. And on behalf of all involved, I genuinely can't thank you enough for saying that to me.
Oh, not at all, Peter. I think it's obvious that everybody in Australia loves what you do. I think you bring a different flavour, and I think that you put a fire in a lot of people's bellies. So I think, yeah, keep coming to Australia and keep raising that bar for us.
Yeah. Well, I'd probably ask you to define the fire in the belly that I put into Australia. But if I can, Daniel, I think I had two notes prior to your words. One was from A.B. Bishop, and she sent me a note in the run-up to being party to organising the talk at Fernie Creek Horticultural Society, the most beautiful people in the world, I should add. What a wonderful place. But she sent me one note, said, "Hello, honorary Aussie." And then the second one, yeah, I smiled genuinely when I read that. But the second one was the day I arrived, and she just, the intro to the note was "Welcome home." Mm-hmm. And you know, look, that's words my mom would have used very choice, but also very eloquently about people she had good time for. And again, I'd say it, to hear you say that, it really does. It makes me smile.
Peter, there's always one final question before we end the episode. It doesn't have to be on topic. It can be about anything at all you'd like. Is there anything else you'd like the listeners to know about?
Good Lord. you'll have to give me a minute on this one. Jeez, wow. Let me see.
Well, I was also meaning to ask you, was there anything else you noticed at the garden show?
Well, let's skip to that one. We'll come back to the other question then. I think at Melbourne MIFCUS, Melbourne International Flower and Garden Show 24, the big surprise for me, I'm not surprised, he says, but I am sort of surprised. But I'm not. I hope that makes sense in equal measures. Pleasantly surprised, but not surprised, but also surprised. Yeah, there you go. But the border gardens were without question up a notch. I significantly, and I fell in love with them. Mm. I thought they were just out of this world. That's one. I was humbled to judge the achievable garden category, as previously noted. But I thought there was certainly, you know, six of them in there where you're sort of saying, at, what is it, 2.4 by 2.4 is a border, 4 by 5 is the dimensions of the achievable. Mm-hmm. The boutiques were 5 by 5, so not a whole lot between. And then you go up a notch and you're a bit of a bigger notch, but you're sort of into show garden sizes. Ours last year was 20 by 10, to put in context. So, but when I looked at the achievables, I just thought these are, put, you know, 5-10 square meters of grass in front of these, or wrap it into the design, and you've got something that's just particularly special. It just, things just ramped up a notch, and I don't know how it did it so significantly within 1 year. I liked the new layout of the show, loved where the, again, where the boutique gardens were. And I thought the garden that Andrew Laidlaw did, even in its location, I thought that was the best location for it, he says eloquently and respectfully so, because of the topographically, he says, or how flat that site was. I'm unsure if there was another better for it, but everywhere I went, even, you know, and this sounds like I'm making a bit of a, I'm being mildly jovial here, but the scarecrows directly opposite Charlie Albone's installation, which was in the middle of the achievable gardens, the crowds going through that were absolutely ridiculous. It just was. And the bell of the ball for me always is the floral marquee. And if people are listening to this 6 months in the future, if you ever get a chance, go into the Royal Exhibition Building, go up the stairs, have a cup of coffee up there and look down, and you'll start to realize just what an amazing building it is, and the amount of work that the people dealing with perishables with a shorter build time managed to piece together. That I just find that place absolutely fascinating. It's also a great place to see how inventive they are. And I'm still stuck last year on the lovely lady, I can't remember her name, escapes me at the minute. And she did one with the basket of a hot air balloon, and how that garden pieced together, or floral installation pieced together over a 3-4 day period, again with perishables, is just mind-boggling and beautiful. And I just think IMG, for what they do, even the hanging baskets, Daniel, I don't know whether you got a chance to see them, like, they were second to none. There was one with three tiers and two stories. It was only short of applying for planning permission. Mm. What a beautiful show. Can't emphasize enough, what a beautiful show.
It was, absolutely. I'm just, it's just a real shame I never got to go into the pavilion because I was outside every day, but just everything I got to see outside was incredible, but just wish I got to go inside.
No. Look, again, I'll say it. I know we spoke about a moment in time, a garden for veterans, and how the whole thing felt like one big group hug. I think when I strolled MIFCUS from meandering from two show gardens down to achievables to some display gardens, even the trade stands weren't out of sync. You go and look at the welcome garden that Jason Hodges did, and the location of the Japanese fused European or West garden that Koji did, another garden built by Semkin Landscaping. You look at the border garden that young Alyssa Astorino did, relating to dementia. I mean, it's not easy to do something like that in a 2.4 by 2.4 square meter space. But then I'll say it, you come back around to the boutiques and you look at what Paul Pritchard and others did, and I'm like, what a wealth of talent, really, to be honest with you. And I think the beauty about a show like that is that you get one garden that you might turn around and go, I'm not a fan of that one, but the age or the era of the or the genre of what you're looking at from one stroll to the next is completely different. You're going from a classical music to a Led Zepp to a 1980s pop band to a, you know, back up to a Def Leppard or a Guns N' Roses. None of it makes sense, but all of the time, or it doesn't always have to make sense, or you don't always have to get it, but there's something there for absolutely everybody.
Yeah.
And yeah, beautifully, just beautifully done. The funny thing in this, Daniel, is when you walk by the Scots Evergreen tent, their workshops were full from top to toe. This is mentioning sponsors, first mentioning sponsors of shows' sake. They didn't sponsor me. That's neither here nor there. But, you know, it's real testament to it when you look at even the demographic in there. It was anything from 3-4 years of age up to 103 years of age and all the way back down again. And they were every half hour, 5 days of the show, and they were full to the brim. And that, I think, is probably testament to what IMG have managed to piece together, and the NGIV, and what makes it MIFCUS. And then I, like I say, there's yourself doing the interviews, and you did a wonderful series of interviews with Ian that I listened to twice on the way home. And I just think credit where it's due for what you do for the industry, for what the AIH did as well. You know, it's real testament to what is a very beautiful industry. And I'm just humbled again, I'll say it, that I'm welcomed again, and that I'm allowed to do a garden that meant so much to a lot of people. And I think we got it right, I hope, but now has the knock-on effect of making things maybe a little bit brighter for those who I and the Semkin family intended it for.
That's beautiful, Peter. Peter, did you have anything else to say for that final question?
No, not really at this moment in time. I'm going to forget something. I promise you, I'll be 2 minutes off air and I'll want to phone you back. But I don't have anything in my head. My head, I hope you'll appreciate this. I probably need to have a cup of coffee and sit down in some sort of field of daisies and just unwind for about 4 or 5 hours. But it's been sort of nonstop. We hit a bank holiday weekend as I came home. I had a three-day journey from Melbourne to Colombo Airport, overnighted there, hit Heathrow, overnighted there, which is an unusual place to overnight. No disrespect to anybody or my colleagues in London. But it was a nice long journey home. I enjoyed it, silly as that sounds. But no, nothing else to report on. And again, Daniel, an absolute pleasure always to chat with you.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, mate. Appreciate your time. Looking forward to our next chat.
Yeah, and look, if there's any of your listeners, you know, again, I'll say it, want to hit me up privately and leave a message or send me a nod, then, you know, please do. And I think I'll say it eloquently, Daniel, if there's any of the students out there or people who are thinking about going and doing a garden at MIFCUS and I can be of some help to you, please, you know, reach out, let me know, and equally be a humbling pleasure. And it's, again, if I might finish, Daniel, it's a pleasure to get to chat with you again, always. And fingers crossed it's not the last time we talk.
Legendary. Cheers, mate. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Daniel. Pleasure.
If you liked this episode, check out my previous two interviews with Peter. Episode 181, A Daydream Supported by a Series of Equations, and episode 177, Show Garden Inspiration. Next week, we'll be celebrating 200 episodes. My mentor, Karen Smith, will interview me about my top 10 episodes and why I think that they bring value to my audience of green industry professionals who seek a deeper understanding of the art and science of plant care. Make sure you don't miss that one.